A new study reveals troubling numbers about sexual assault in Florida. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. You can also stream the audio of this show live right now on our Facebook page. And just ahead, a new report shows 1 in 6 women in Florida have been raped. It's Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Find out what Betty Griffin Center is doing about this problem. 549-2937. Then later, 34 new works of public art are coming to downtown Jacksonville. Find out where you can spot them. Plus, human interaction in a world of rapid technical change. We've got a preview of the new show, On Purpose. It'll be performed right here at WJCT. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we're focusing on that issue on the show all throughout the month. It's a big problem in Florida, where 1 in 6 women have reported being raped. However, sexual violence is actually a crime that is typically vastly underreported, so the numbers are likely higher. All throughout our listening area, different organizations are doing what they can to combat this problem. And we begin the hour with a closer look right now as we welcome Ruby Hodder, Advocacy Team Coordinator, and Sandy Cipollini, Green Dot Coordinator, both with Betty Griffin Center. They're here to tell us more about what's happening this month here on the First Coast. Ladies, good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
And what are your questions for Betty Griffin Center as 1 in 6 women in the state report being sexually assaulted? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, email us, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Or weigh in on our Facebook page. Ruby, let's begin with you. These statistics come from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, correct?
Yes, they do.
And what does the report show?
Well, the report shows that we have a shocking problem in our community. And I think the good part of it is that actually we're sitting here talking about it. It's been so many years that this has been going on. The numbers are now coming out. The research is being done. And the conversation is going on. That's the good part.
That's right. And April in particular, we're seeing a lot of discussion about this. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Sandy, you're the Green Dot Coordinator for Betty Griffin Center, and that's a way, and this is in coordination with Flagler College.
Yes.
This is a way to publicize this. Tell us about the Green Dot campaign.
The Green Dot, we're very fortunate to be part of a national campaign that the Green Dot program is a part of the national campaign
For prevention of
the Green Dot program. In the state of Florida, there's about a half a dozen colleges that are participating, and we're working with Flagler College, the Betty Griffin Center and Flagler College, to promote the program. And what it is a bystander intervention program where we all as bystanders can intervene when we see an act of personal violence happening around us. For example, stalking, dating violence, sexual assault, and that's considered a red dot, that act of violence. And the green dot is the interaction, it's the intervention that we do either in a direct or delegate or distracting way to stop that violence from happening. And that's what we're promoting on the campus of Flagler for the staff and the students and also the surrounding community in St. Augustine.
There's even a social media hashtag for this coming from Flagler College. It's
yes.
FC Green Dot.
Yes.
And there are a lot of red dots to combat in Florida. Let's talk about the numbers in Florida, if we could. Ruby, more than a million Florida women, 1.2 million women in Florida report being raped. That's an underreported number, though, isn't it?
It is an underreported number because I think the statistics also show that over 50%, actually in the 60% somewhere, are the number that are unreported. And hopefully this number could change because people get, our women, I say people, women and men both come forward for services for sexual assault. But as women and men.
Men are assaulted too sometimes.
Yes, men are assaulted also. And we do have services at at Betty Griffin Center for men and women both. But as people get, men and women get more comfortable with it, they will come forward. They feel more safe. And maybe that will lead to more reporting. And, of course, the ultimate goal is more justice for the victims.
Sure. And if you're just tuning in, we want your calls about Sexual Assault Awareness Month. What are your questions about the Green Dot campaign? This is a national effort, but you'll see it on the Flagler College campus with the help of Betty Griffin Center in St. Johns County. Give us a call at 549-2937. Now, according to the National Women's Study Replication, only 18% of rapes are actually reported to law enforcement. Only 10% of drug and alcohol facilitated assaults or rapes are reported. And so when it comes to this issue on campus, it's a particular problem when young people get together and there's alcohol involved. This is why I assume Flagler is really getting on board with the Green Dot campaign.
Well, I think all colleges are having this problem. And that's one of the reasons that we're reaching out to the community in St. Augustine at the different bars and restaurants, and so that everyone can be aware of this campaign and students and community members can intervene. What we found through the national program is there's always someone along the way that witnesses this interaction happening, and they do have that opportunity to intervene and stop that red dot from happening.
And we've been talking about this through the month on the show, the case on the Stanford University campus where a young woman was being raped by a man named Brock Turner. That assault was stopped because two Swedish students that were on bicycles happened to go by and see what was happening, and they intervened. You're trying to encourage more people to do that. And so how difficult is it really, though, to get this message across? Because sometimes people are afraid to intervene if they see, whether it may not be an actual sexual assault, but they might see something happening that looks not right. And they're often reluctant to intervene.
That's right. We talk about that in our training, and those are barriers that we all have. Maybe they're not sure to intervene, or maybe they know the people and they don't really want to get involved. Maybe it's their roommate. Maybe it's a stranger, and they're not sure it's even safe to intervene. But what we do in the training is we talk about three ways to intervene, either directly. If you don't feel comfortable and safe intervening directly, you can delegate and get someone else to intervene with you, or call the police or campus police or a group of friends to help intervene, or you can do a distraction. And in our training, we go in depth about all these different ways to intervene so that when you're in the situation, it's going to be natural. You'll realize you have options and alternatives to take action.
How can people take advantage of this training? Is it open to anyone?
It's open to Flagler College students and staff. And members of Betty Griffin Center right now. There are certain communities in the state of Florida that are doing a community Green Dot, and there are some high schools in the state of Florida besides the colleges. But our focus is Flagler College students and staff.
And Betty Griffin, of course, is the shelter in St. Johns County for people seeking refuge from mainly domestic violence, correct?
Well, it's domestic violence and sexual assault also. And of course, these two are also so very overlapping.
Yeah.
And I will just say, in case anybody who's listening to us now or anybody would like to feel like somebody's out there that they can call and go to for help, if they call our hotline number, 824-1555, somebody's going to be on the other end of that line to talk with them, counsel with them 24/7. And I think when we're talking about shelter also, we're talking about a safe place where a woman can feel that she can come, and with her children, if needed also, where she can stay.
All right, let's go to your calls now. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and this morning we're taking a look at one aspect of efforts to combat sexual violence on the First Coast with the Betty Griffin Center and their collaboration with Flagler College and the National Green Dot Campaign. It's hashtag FC Green Dot. What are your questions? 549-2937. David is in Fernandina Beach. Hey, David, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Yeah,
how
go ahead.
You?
Good, thanks.
Hey, what can I as a man do and other men do on the First Coast to help diminish the occurrence of rape?
Thank you for that question.
I love that question. That is fantastic because men are becoming a part of the conversation now. And when we talk about April being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we're also very much into the prevention. And the prevention part of it is up to each and every one of us, including all the males in our society and on our culture. And what they can do is kind of like what's going on with the Green Dot program. When they hear something that's going on that's a red dot, whether it's a sexist comment, which maybe it's not illegal, catcalling, whatever it might be, it's detrimental, it's harmful, it leads to the inequity that brings about sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And this is what any man can do, any woman can do, and even children are learning how to do this. And no matter what their position is in our society, they have a role in prevention. There's always something that they can do when they hear something, see something that's just not right.
Yeah.
It's not the right thing to do. They can change that.
There's a controversial hashtag that I've seen on Twitter called Not All Men, where men will say, look, don't lump me in with bad guys who do these awful acts. Don't assume that I'm a bad guy just because I'm a man. It's not fair to castigate me. At the same time, good men can sometimes enable bad behavior because they might be reluctant to call out another man's bad behavior. That's a cultural problem.
I think
so. Would you challenge the caller then to become aware of that dynamic?
I would challenge him to just become aware of his environments, what's being said, what's happening, what's being done. He knows what's right and what's wrong, basically. He knows that if a friend or somebody is making a misogynistic comment, he knows that that's not right. You know, he has a mother, a sister, a daughter, whatever he might have. He wouldn't want that to happen to them. So he calls it out. Whether he uses a green dot approach to it, whatever works for him to show that this is not acceptable with me, this is not acceptable in our culture, and as a male, I'm not going to stand for it.
I think another way men can help is in the way they raise their sons, not just the way they raise their daughters. What about that?
I think that's an excellent thought. It goes both ways. We're a community that works together as a whole. We're a whole culture. We have to raise both our children, our daughters, our sons, in the same manner of respecting and equity with all of them. It doesn't matter whether they're male or female. We're all in this culture together.
And tell us a little bit more about Betty Griffin and its history in St. Johns County.
Well, Betty Griffin Center started, which, by the way, Betty Griffin Center is a new name for
us. It used to be Betty Griffin House.
It was Betty Griffin House for over 20 years. Now it's Betty Griffin Center. Betty Griffin House started basically, if I have this story correct, I haven't been there for 20 years, so I don't know the whole story maybe, but I think it started over 20 years ago when a woman in our communities, her mother passed away, and she wanted to recognize what her mother had done for the community and offered us a building that could be used for a shelter for women who had been abused. And it's gone on for 20 years, growing, very much growing.
What have been some of the growths, areas that you've seen?
Some of the growth areas are that we are becoming basically wraparound services for victims, however they've been victimized through domestic violence or sexual assault. We have advocates who are now available in the sheriff's office. We have advocates with the Department of Children and Families. We have advocates with the state attorney's office. Wherever it is that we can provide services for women in need, we're going to be there.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the National Green Dot Campaign as April marks Sexual Assault Awareness Month. If you see a red dot, an act of violence towards someone, sexual violence, or even the hint of it, you're challenged to respond with a green dot. That's a way to intervene and stop what's happening or report it. What are your questions about this? 549-2937. Arthur on the South Side. Hey, Arthur, good morning.
Good morning. I appreciate your show and I appreciate the call from the gentleman that wanted to know what we as men could do. I just want to basically lay it on the line and say, red dot in the White House, let us not forget. Thank you.
Okay, he's talking about President Trump, who, of course, during his campaign, many allegations of women coming forward saying that President Trump had either assaulted them or behaved very inappropriately with them. So what about that aspect of this, that we have a president who has been was elected despite credible allegations of sexual assault? What does that say about our culture?
It's a difficult issue to talk about because it's so political. People who are very upset because this incident, these things have happened, these women have come forward. It's difficult to deal with a political situation that maybe in its some ways seems to include part of the rape culture. But I think it's also up to us as a society to, and as a culture, to move forward with what we think is right. There's always going to be two sides to everything, and we just have to continue to use the strength that we have to move in the direction that we know is right for our society and for our culture. And rape is not a part of it. Sexual assault, sexual violence should not be a part of our culture.
It was striking to see how so many women came forward, and it appeared to confirm a perception that a lot of women hold, which is that if I do come forward, I won't be taken seriously. I won't be believed.
That's why we have this, actually it's a national program also that's called Start By Believing, and we have totally adopted that as our approach. The Start By Believing, that first response to a woman who's been sexually assaulted or sexual violence of any kind, this is the part that makes the most difference to her. If she first runs into somebody who's going to believe what she says, she's going to be started on the way towards healing. Without that belief, it's almost impossible. Mm-hmm. And why so many of these women don't come forward or didn't come forward a long time ago, there's that power difference. There's the inequity between the power of that some of the males in our society may have compared to the women who come forward. We have other incidences of that in many of our institutions.
Let's talk about those because they're in the headlines even now. Bill Cosby is getting ready to stand trial. There were allegations that went back decades involving literally dozens of women. There had to be an overwhelming critical mass of women coming forward, not just one or two, for these allegations to be seen as credible. Now we're seeing in the news this week, Fox News star Bill O'Reilly is now facing the same dynamic where many women are coming forward and telling their stories and filing legal actions. But as you said just now, often the person being accused has a lot of power. And so the female accuser often does not or is dependent on this person's goodwill or this person's power in the workplace to get ahead professionally or to, in the case of Cosby, to get ahead. They were trying to get ahead in the entertainment industry. But this lopsided power dynamic contributes often in the workplace to a lot of these problems. And I know we're talking about rape and sexual assault, but there's also the issue of sexual harassment.
There is that issue. And so much of this starts, as you were talking about before, with teaching your children, your sons and daughters, how to respond. This is where it actually starts. If we allow our children to be raised inequitably, and I will go back to a very simple thing, like what a coach can do. When you hear a coach on a field say, hey, you're throwing like a girl, does anybody look at that as being something positive? No, they think that is something negative. And then you go on and you carry that on through the years with that type of approach. That's where we end up with that different power structure where women have basically, unless they're in large numbers, they're ignored, they're not believed. And then even with the large numbers, it's why didn't you come forward before? And that's very hard to explain why you couldn't come forward. People aren't listening to the answer to that.
So what you're saying is that we have to change an entire culture in terms of the way we think about women and girls and the way we talk about them.
Absolutely.
That's hard.
And it is very hard because it's so inbred in us. We're so used to going back to whatever your mothers taught you when you were a child as a daughter. If something happens to you, it's your fault. We all go back to the victim blaming. And that's part of our society that needs to change because it's never the victim's fault. It's only the person who decided to commit the crime who is the one who's responsible for the crime. Now, we as a society can try to prevent that by how we approach the person who's committing the crime or is a potential committing the crime, like in Green Dot. But basically, we need justice for the person that has been victimized.
Quick question on email from Rob. I think when someone's been assaulted, they might even be afraid to leave their pets. Pets who have intervened on the victim's behalf. Is there any program at Betty Griffin for that, for pets? That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that.
It is an issue that comes up a lot because we all know how attached we get to our pets.
Sure.
And I'd have to say right now, unfortunately, we do not have a shelter where the women can bring their pets with them. It's been talked about, it's been discussed, but it's a whole nother area of financial need we would have also to have facilities and so on for it. But if somebody has a real issue, I can tell you very seriously that all the family advocates at the shelter will work very hard to find some care for somebody's pets who is very concerned about their pets as to whether or not they're going to look for safety for themselves.
All right, and let's talk quickly about the 2017 5K Run for Peace coming up this Saturday at the St. Augustine Pier, all to benefit Betty Griffin Center. What's going to be happening?
We're excited about it. This is fantastic. I do this race also, and it's okay. A fun thing to do. It's going to happen on Saturday, as you said. It starts at 8 o'clock in the morning. We're going to be meeting at the St. Augustine Pier, and then we do not go across the bridge downtown like some people think maybe this race goes. It's all on the beach and circles around our beautiful tree-lined streets on Anastasia Island. And there are awards, there's prizes, it's a fun time. There's over 500 people came last year, and we're already ahead of those numbers for this year from what it was last year. So we're excited about it.
Go to BettyGriffinCenter.org for more, and thank you both so much for joining us. Green Dot Coordinator Sandy Cipollini and Advocacy Team Coordinator Ruby Hodder, both with Betty Griffin Center. Ladies, thanks.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
And much more still ahead later. A look at prison reform in Florida from someone who served time. But first, we need your financial support to keep bringing you the programs you enjoy. Here's how.
Give us a phone call at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528 or go online at wjct.org. Good morning. I'm Kevin Mershart, producer for First Coast Connect. If you're enjoying this program, this great conversation we just had on the Betty Griffin House and Complex and all the stuff, wonderful stuff they do down there in St. Augustine, then by all means, give us a call and show your financial support. We're at $31,275 at the moment for this drive. And quite frankly, folks, we need to get to 50 by the end of business today. That will get us halfway through with two more days to go. That's not easy, but we can probably do that based on our past history. But we're doing better, but let's get up again. Let's get to 50,000. So if you haven't done your part yet, make a call now. Become a sustainer at $10 a month. Get yourself a nice WJCT 45th anniversary t-shirt if you want, but you got to make that call, 353-9528. Every day here on First Coast Connect, Melissa and I get together and think about what do we want to put on the air in the coming days. We usually try to plan ahead a few days, of course, and we get lots of suggestions from people, and we think about some stuff ourselves, things going on in the world or what's going on in the news, what's going on locally, what's going on in the state, and how we can address that and get some really into the teeth of it and really dig in. Well, we're able to do that because of listeners like you showing your financial support for this program. So make that call right now, and thank you very much. Once again, the number is 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528. We bring you great stories from people you may not be able to hear anywhere else. Just an example coming up. What do we have? We have Moliere DiMacci. He was spent nearly a decade in prison. He got out, turned his life around, and now he does things helping others and tells his story. It's an inspiration. It's something to hear. And you're going to hear it in just a couple of minutes right here on WJCT. Make that call now, and thank you very much for your support. The number again is 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. Every day, it's what we bring to you. If this is the kind of program you enjoy, you'd like to hear this, we're going to talk about that great program going on with art around the community in public places in Jacksonville. A whole bunch of new artists, a bunch of new stuff is coming into downtown. You can just wander around downtown and look some great art here. Where else can you do that? Well, actually a lot of cities, but we get to do that now around Jacksonville because we're moving forward. We're thinking about great stuff for you in this community. It's not going to cost you anything. You can just, maybe you got some neighbors, you got some guests, you take them downtown, you say, here, look at all this great art we got here in downtown Jacksonville. Call in and show your support. Thank you very much. 353-9528, 1-800-722-928 to show support for this, your public radio station.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things for North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info. WJCT Public Broadcasting, the City of Jacksonville's Military Affairs and Veterans Department, invites you to The Wall That Heals, which honors Vietnam veterans, April 13th through 16th at Metropolitan Park. The wall can be visited 24 hours a day, open and free to the public. To find out how you can volunteer or submit your pictures, visit wjct.org/storiesofservice.
Welcome back. He served nearly a decade in Florida state prisons, nearly three of those years in solitary confinement at one time or another. Now, artist and author Mullier Dimash has become an activist on the issue of prison reform. After serving his sentence, Dimash went to college, and he explored his talents, all to put a spotlight on issues in the state's criminal justice system. He'll be making a special appearance in St. Augustine this weekend. We have a preview right now. Mullier Dimash, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Now, your book is called It Takes a Criminal to Know One, and it's an account of what you experienced in the state's prison system.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of issues in this book, but in particular, you write about what you saw behind bars and how often you were placed in solitary confinement when you complained about abuses that you saw, correct?
Correct.
Can you give an example of what types of things would happen?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me again. You made me famous last time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got a lot of compliments on
my
speaking voice, and I owe that to you.
Well, you got your own voice.
Thanks. Well, It Takes a Criminal to Know One. It focuses on prison abuse and the investigations for the most part because, you know, I addressed systemic abuse that I saw in the prisons, and most of it was by way of using the chemical agents and the misuse of the use of force policy in the prisons to execute it. You know, they have a lot of loopholes mm-hmm. that they were using to get away with, you know, abusing inmates and all of that. So I started challenging it, and I started helping inmates find a way to address these issues and, you know, try to, you know, put a stop to it. And I think the most common form of abuse that I saw was the tear gas. The tear gas was...
When would they use tear gas?
Well, if any time that an inmate upset an officer or anything, the way that the process goes is that there's a portion of the use of force rule that allows them to use the tear gas on inmates without recording it. So there's a point where they actually pull out the cameras and then they turn the cameras off in accordance with the way that the rule is written. And once that camera's turned off, they'll use as much of the chemical agents as possible. So a lot of inmates were, you know, they were applying force to inmates off camera in a way to, you know, manipulate it. And, you know, you can just be sitting on your bunk reading the Bible or something. If that camera don't record it, you were kicking on that door and banging and causing a disturbance. And they had to, quote unquote, quell your disturbance with those chemical agents, and it's killed some inmates.
And so you, when you would complain about this, they'd put you in solitary?
Yeah, they would transfer me. I mean, it got to the point where, you know, so many inmates were looking for help on how to, you know, file the grievances or get their concerns into the courts. And I had the knowledge, you know, I helped educate inmates about this. And it got to the point to where, you know, there would be so many grievances coming in from the stuff that I was teaching other inmates that it was like, okay, let's cut the head off the snake. Let's get him out of here. And, you know, before they started with the multiple transfers to, you know, 13 institutions and all, they ended up gassing me in an attempt to, you know, scare me out of it. And, you know, that only made things worse. So what I ended up doing, I focused on my own case and I actually litigated it in court. And next month, I'm actually going to be personally prosecuting a case against 16 of these officers, like actually holding a real trial. Like I'm going to be cross-examining these folks and, you know, doing the jury selection. I'm going to be getting my Perry Mason on in the courtroom up until
you're going to represent yourself.
I'm already representing myself. They published a case law about it. I mean, I actually achieved a federal case law on this and it's set for trial.
Wow. And not only are you going forward in court, you also have become a sought-after artist and author. And it's your artwork is much in demand because it's artwork that was really inspired by your time in prison. And to be clear, you were sentenced at the age of 19 to 10 years for stolen goods and a firearm. Mm-hmm. And you served 8.5 years of that sentence. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's right. I think the 8.5 came from the fact that, you know, they got tired of transferring me and they said, let's kick him out of here, get him out of mm-hmm. prison because he's causing too much of a problem. As far as the artwork, what I was doing with that was, it was kind of like a documentary of what I was seeing. And, you know, I think the most important lesson I've learned in my personal life was just laugh. If you can't, don't cry about nothing. You know, this is serious stuff we're talking about. You know, there's a lot of topics in this book that are hard to get through. And I did my best to make it as humorous as possible, because if you can laugh at tragedy, you'll make it through anything. Right. So I incorporated a lot of humor into my art to not only make it funny, but to make it more engaging for people, you know, like in this book. The same art that we're talking about is used as chapter art. Like you'll get to a certain chapter, you'll see the art and you may not be able to immediately interpret it. But once you read that chapter, you can go back and say, oh, this is what this meant. This is what this meant. Why does he have this nutcracker doll here? Oh, this is what that meant. You know, so it's a pretty engaging read for people. And I found that, you know, humor is the best medicine for all things. So.
And sure it is. At the same time, you're bringing up some really serious allegations, and there's been a mm-hmm. growing kind of groundswell about prison reform, not just in Florida, but in this country, in particular the use of solitary confinement, which increasingly opponents are calling cruel and unusual punishment. And mm-hmm. at any given time, you know, a study just released by Yale Law School says between 80 to 100,000 inmates across the country are being held in solitary.
Mm-hmm.
Is it your position that they should abolish solitary confinement?
Absolutely. I mean, they use confinement for some of the most unnecessary purposes. Like I was just speaking to someone out in the lobby that has a relative that's in prison who just happened to be at a scene where an incident occurred. Right. And just because he was a witness, thrown in solitary confinement. You have the PREA, the PREA, the Prison Rape Elimination Act. If an inmate alleges that he's the victim of any kind of assault, solitary confinement under investigation. There's no difference in the conditions between somebody in disciplinary confinement or administrative confinement. It's the same thing. They just use it over and over and over again. And it's so easy to go back there and get stuck. Like, you know, you might go to confinement for disobeying a verbal order. If your bed isn't made at 6 o'clock in the morning, if it's made at 6:01, you get another DR. That's another 30 to 60 days just for not having your bed made. And it's you have inmates doing years in confinement for minor offenses, and it's driving them crazy. And they don't even know it. You know, it's a
form of mental torture, according to
yes.
social scientists.
Yes.
And so people can learn more about this by buying your book. Mm-hmm. It's called It Takes a Criminal to Know One. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a book signing, an art show, a meet and greet in St. Augustine this weekend. Tell us about it.
Yes, we're going to be in St. Augustine at City Bistro on US 1. We've got the art. I got a lot of new stuff, a lot of pieces I've been able to do in color since I've been out. It's not done with them broken pieces of pencils that were smuggled to me in confinement. So I actually got to work with some real materials. We got the original confinement art done on the back of those prison documents I could scrounge up. And we're going to have delicious food, delicious catering, that a special menu they're preparing just for this show. Joe Siegel and the House Cats are going to tear the roof off. And we're going to be there just hanging out, you know, meeting everybody and having a good time, drinking.
Bully or Dimash, always good to talk to you. And I'm sure there will be a lot of takers, because it really is. You really do have an amazing artistic talent. And we thank you for being with us. Again, this is on the 9th at CD Bistro in St. Augustine, mm-hmm. 4 p.m. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And speaking of art, in a moment, we'll tell you about dozens of new works of public art coming to downtown Jacksonville.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, fan fiction. It's been around for a long time, but nowadays everyone has the tools to create new worlds for their favorite book, TV, and movie characters. Many fans love it. Some creators of the original content tolerate it. Grudgingly. Who's having the most fun? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
It's almost like deja vu. Almost. Except you remember. You remember every single step of the journey. On the Next Step Judgment, we proudly present Full Circle. Amazing stories about ending up exactly where you got started. Snap Judgment. Storytelling at the beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Ago. 1972, Don McLean released American Pie. Meanwhile, here in Jacksonville, a brand new radio station began broadcasting. WJCT has served the First Coast for the past 45 years, and we're still going strong thanks to listeners like you. You can support our news programming, independent music, and community outreach by becoming a sustainer at WJCT.org.
Welcome back. Well, exciting news for the city's urban core. 34 new works of art are coming to downtown Jacksonville. These new pieces you'll be able to spot along Laura Hogan Adams, Forsyth, and Water Streets are the result of the Jacksonville Downtown Investment Authority's plan to enliven the urban core through streetscape art. So what's going to be unveiled? Here with a preview, Christy Holacek from Art in Public Places. Good morning.
Good morning.
And artist Andrew Reed Shedd. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Andrew, let's start with you. You have created 8 skyway columns, hand-painted pieces of art along Bay Street between Hogan and Julia. Is that right?
That's right.
What are we going to see here?
Well, each one's kind of unique. There's a story in each one. There's a couple of that are purely graphic, but mostly descriptive columns of the Jacksonville downtown. We researched this project a year ago, and then I went back to Miami and did the designs and showed them to the cultural council and the committee, the selection committee, and they did a couple of changes. And from there, I finished 4 days ago.
Oh, you just got done. Wow.
Yeah, I was here on the street for a month, and it was an incredible experience. It's a life-affecting experience on the street. But they are stories. They go from political to cultural to graphic, but they're to do each one with something to do with the Jacksonville history or culture, or perhaps even an optimistic view of the future.
pretty exciting. Now, Christy, Andrew's talent and his work joins that of other public artists. There's lots of projects. People are seeing lots of public art popping up everywhere. Give us the big picture on what's happening. And there's going to be some events this week, too, right?
That's correct. It's Public Art Week this week. We are bringing public art to the community. That is essentially the core of the Art in Public Places program and the Urban Arts Project. It's essentially how do we enliven the downtown core with art, and how do we bring artists to the city? And we are really making a lot of efforts to focus on the urban core, focus on the heart of our city. And, we're, as you mentioned, lots of projects, functional bicycle racks. There's an outdoor sculpture that was installed by Rafael Consuegra. And in terms of big picture, this is actually a four-year project with three phases. So we're excited to roll it out.
What are some of the upcoming phases?
Well, phase two will actually be in the Elbow District. And then phase three will kind of round itself back around towards Main Street Park.
Excellent. But for now, this phase one piece where you've been working, Andrew, what is your hope for people that see your artwork displayed publicly on these, public pieces of infrastructure? How do you think your talent is going to sort of change the character of the urban core?
I think it's too late. I think it's already changed.
Okay.
From the moment I started, the people started doing selfies, social media. One particular column people were going nuts over. So I suggest you go down and take a look for yourself. But at the color Christy mentioned, that was our brief. The other artist who's doing the columns, Cecilia Loeza, the only thing, as artists, we don't agree on much because we have our own egos and things and tastes and style. But the one thing we totally agreed on coming from the research we took was color, brightness. And that totally affects the way people, people are stopping in the middle of Bay Street. You're going to have issues.
That's a good problem to have, said there's one in particular people went nuts over. What does it show?
It's a contribution to the African American culture. Even though it depicts a couple of white people, Lincoln and Harriet Beecher Stowe, as well as James Weldon Johnson. But I hadn't even put the words on it or the quotes, and there was something of a response. And I don't know what it was. I think it was Lincoln. And I thought that was really interesting. But all day, every day, being on the street, whether it's a homeless person or an office worker or a Jacksonville engineer, people are just constantly saying things. I'd have days where people would say thank you, or another day where they would go, wow, the color. So it's already happening, I guess, is what I mean. I think it's the process that the Cultural Council and the Art in Public Places have put into motion over the last few years. It was a pretty big deal getting six artists and convincing the commission, the council, to do this as one go,
and
phase one.
Exciting that they did. So, Christy, there are going to be, in accordance with Public Art Week, people can be part of this. There's a lecture tonight at MoCA, public artist Janet Etchelman. The day after that, on the 6th, at the TU Center, artists who are interested in applying for a public art commission can come to that. A free public art walking tour coming up Friday with water taxis. How can people find out more and be part of Public Art Week?
Sure. If you go to culturalcouncil.org, under events, we have all the information on Public Art Week. And we're really excited, especially with Janet Etchelman coming into town. She's a renowned public artist. She really elevates the conversation in terms of materials and environmental art. And then, as you mentioned, the listening session on Thursday is really an opportunity to hear from the community. We really are interested in hearing from the artists, and we want to see how together we can build public art for our city. And then Friday, you mentioned the tour. We're really excited. We're bringing more tours. It's a two-hour tour, and it will start at the Times Union Center for Performing Arts at 12 o'clock on Friday. It's essentially probably 4 hours worth of a tour, but we're going to make it a great two-hour trip, and we'll also take the taxi over to the South Bank Riverwalk.
Excellent. Look for all the beautiful new public art downtown. Artist Andrew Reed Shedd and Christy Holacek with Art in Public Places. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
The guy in the pink shirt is kind of clenching his fist, and I'm thinking, I'm a social worker. I've got a lot of experience in drug addiction and group therapy. There's a group of us here.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour, true stories told live from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
The world feels like it's getting faster. As you listen more to keep up with a new administration in office, new cabinet appointments, and countless policy changes, it might feel like the news is coming at you at light speed.
For the Supreme Court,
executive order on immigration,
restraining order
the Affordable
on the policy
Care Act,
and Michael
Obamacare.
Flynn had resigned as Russian intelligence official.
But public radio helps to slow the news down. You listen to this station because we sort through the chaos to bring you the facts. Become a new or sustaining member today and keep the voices you trust on the air. Thanks.
Put your hands together.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Georgia Ann Muldrow.
33 years old now, about as silly as a 9-year-old, vegan, black power, every hour, and I love jazz, you know.
The singer brings her take on Charles Mingus to the Kennedy Center with an all-star band led by Jason Moran. I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, technology continues to influence our culture and how we relate to others online and how we distance ourselves from them sometimes as well. It's a theme explored in this era of rapid technological change in the new play, On Purpose. It's being performed this weekend right here at WJCT Studios. We've got a preview now from playwright Ebony Payne English and director Jamario Stills. Good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, Ebony, let's begin with you. What inspired On Purpose?
I had a story I wanted to tell, and my poetry, although that's my chosen medium to communicate, I just didn't feel like I could sufficiently tell this story that way. Music is my backup, and I wasn't quite happy with what I was writing there. And since my origins stem in the theater, it came out as a play. That's what happened.
Excellent. Now, Jamario, you direct this piece. This invites the audience to engage with compelling stories of 9 different women. Tell us a little bit about the show.
Absolutely. To Ebony's point, it's a beautiful piece that she designed, created, and wrote to tell her story through the voices of 9 different women. And when I read it initially, I saw so much in the piece, which compelled me to add video, digital media, because her words are so graphic and so visual. And it's been a treat to work on it. She's doing a beautiful job. And I think a lot of people, the play is going to have something accessible for everyone.
And this theme of technology, how it affects our relationships, is really interesting to me, too.
Yes.
On the one hand, we're so close to people. We can reach them instantly with a text. But on the other hand, it puts a barrier between people.
Yes. And that's the idea, the concept of bringing live stage play to a television studio, WJCT, and creating a bridge for that interaction, mm-hmm. Merging the idea of digital media with live stage performance and real stories. It was conceptualized by Jamario Stills, the brilliant Jamario Stills, and I was able to pair the play with it, and it worked out great.
Right. So it's the multimedia aspect of this, I think, that's so interesting. you figured out you're blending live performance with all these other media pieces. A really kind of layered theater experience, it sounds like.
It is. It's, there's a lot of nuance in it. And again, the idea behind the media is to help frame the story. You know, we want to make sure that if we're involving digital aspects to the piece, it was to help the story, not to upstage the story. And most importantly, pay honor to the content of the play. And so you'll see various pieces in there. You'll see some pre-recorded pieces of Ebony. You'll see still shots that help centralize where the locations of certain parts of the play take place. And so the idea is to use this media concept to frame and shape the audience's experience. And again, to close that gap between technology and live theater. This is a new day and age we're in. And I think a lot more people are beginning to embrace the idea of what this technology means to them. And in the story, we're able to help shape that. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
And it's this weekend at WJCT. Ebony Payne English is On Purpose, directed by Jamario Stills. How can people get their tickets?
They can get it on Eventbrite, but there are ticket purchases available at the door as well.
Saturday or Friday night, right?
Friday night at 8 p.m., Saturday night at 8 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m.
At WJCT.
Three performances of On Purpose by two really amazing local talents. Thanks to Ebony Payne English and Jamario Stills. Break a leg, and thank you for being with us.
No, thank you. I'm honored
to be here.
Thank
you so much.
It's so cool to have all these performances right here in our studios, too. It's just part of what WJCT does for this community. If you want to be part of our mission and keep us going strong all year long, we need you to give us a call. Here's how.
Give us a call at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528. That's 353-WJCT. Good morning. I'm Kevin Murchard, producer for First Coast Connect. We're here asking for your support for this program. We need to get to about $50,000 today. We're around $31,000 now. So a $20,000 day, that can be done. We've done it before. You've done that before on numerous occasions. But that way we can make sure we're getting closer to that goal of $100,000. Our pledge drive ends Friday, 6 o'clock p.m. We need to get to $100,000 so we can make sure that we're always able to bring you these great programs like this here at WJCT. You know, public service is the center of public radio. It's the center of our news department to provide you great information and the context of what's going on around Jacksonville on the First Coast and the state of Florida. NPR, it's important for them as well. It's a daily process of every day painting a picture of the world, every day telling you what's going on. The one thing about news is that once the day's over, that's no longer news. That's history. Now we have to go find some more news going on in the world, and there's plenty of it going on. Plenty going on around town. Plenty, of course, going all over around the world. Very sad situations. Very inspiring situations. NPR brings all of those to you, but it's made possible because of listeners like you. It's not easy to bring you the news going on in Syria and things like that, but we're able to do that because of your financial support. So if you enjoy all the programs you enjoy, you're a big fan of 1A coming up, make that call now, and thank you very much for your support. Become a sustainer, $10 a month. Get yourself that 45th anniversary t-shirt and wear it proudly around town. Make that call now, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, online, wjct.org, and thank you.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.